This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tan Talk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And even though it's cold here, and for us it's freezing, somewhere I think in the 50s, you know, if you are looking for a book to read and you just want to snuggle down and just read and read, then you have to get this next book. He's done it to me again. Jerome Preisler is back with me on Joy on Paper after just a few weeks. He was here a few weeks ago. Hi, Jerome.
Hi, Patsy.
Oh, what am I going to do with you? You do this to me all the time. I cannot read a first page of your book. Because then I can't stop. And this this book is so good. Did you know, I don't know if you noticed, if you look at your Facebook page, this morning I sent a note to the Pulitzer Prize people, and I said, this is a winner. Because I did it because it's so good. It's called Civil War Commando. William Cushing and the Daring Raid to Sink the Ironclad. CSS Albemarle. Oh boy. This is amazing. This is, you know, of course you were here and, you know, and I think I crowned you the king of techno thrillers. But
I saw. Extremely flattered.
But this puts you in a different league. This book is amazing. Where do I start? I can't spend, you know, I cannot spend a half an hour just telling you how brilliant you are, and everybody should just, you know that.
I can take it.
You can take it, can you? Where do we start with this book? From the very first page, as I started reading it, after a page down, I was crying. I knew that it's a prologue, and I knew that everything was going to be all right with this kid, but I just had tears in my eyes from the sheer beauty of your writing. So tell us how you got the idea for this story and the sort of the background, because, it has been mentioned, of course, that you have a connection here. It has a connection here with Star Wars, which might intrigue people.
Mm-hmm. The connection with Star Wars was nothing I knew about when I started writing. I may have even started writing, and certainly I was well into my research. And that was that Will Cushing actually was one of several, he had several siblings, and two of whom, or three of whom, also served in the military during the Civil War. One of them, I believe it was Howard Cushing, was friends, while serving was in the Union Army, was friends with another soldier who was best friends with Edgar Rice Burroughs. And that guy would regale Burroughs with tales of the Cushing family. And Burroughs, of course, is most famously known for the Tarzan books, but he also wrote a very famous series of books featuring a hero called John Carter of Mars. He was one of the first science fiction writers. And he had this whole story about the Death Star. It wasn't called the Death Star, but it was a Death Star-like spacecraft, and the whole mission against it that George Lucas later said was his inspiration for Star Wars. The Death Star, the story that actually inspired the Death Star was Will's raid on the CSS Albemarle, which is really interesting. And that was conveyed to Burroughs via, if you can follow this chain, was conveyed to Burroughs via his mutual close friend with Will's brother, Howard.
Well,
there's your connection.
It is. Well, you know, let's use that. Maybe it will intrigue people, because people should, I think anybody who's been in the military will love this book. I mean, and then anybody who loves history, like I do, will love this book. It is so good. You have written it so beautifully. I, you know, as I'm reading, I know it's nonfiction, and I kept saying, yeah, but this is just so, where do you come out with a character like Will Cushing? I mean, this is, whoo, he is something.
You know, what had happened was, just kind of, you know, trying to trace it back, right around 2013 or 2014, I'd written a book called First to Jump, which was about a paratrooper unit in World War II, and they were a group called the Pathfinders that were sent on suicide missions. And most of these guys who were volunteers, and the reason they volunteered was because it was either go on these missions or go in the brig. In fact, one particular group of these Pathfinders that I wrote about in that book inspired the famous movie The Dirty Dozen. They called themselves the Filthy 13 in reality. Anyway, after writing that book, I was looking, I like to do a history book every few years. And I'd done a couple set in World War II, so I wanted to do a different era. And I liked, you know, the Civil War came to me, and the Revolutionary War came to me. And I started poking around, and I became, I somehow or other came up with a hit on Will. And there was something extremely, and this was just like poking around the internet, a brief post on a local website or something. But there was something extremely romantic about what I was initially reading about him, and I mean romantic with the capital R, in the sense that this guy was actually is a personality that goes back. Even, you know, if you look at what he's like, he reminds you of a medieval knight or a Renaissance knight. This was a guy who was gallant and independent and went by his own very strong code of honor. So that's what attracted me to him. And then I just started doing the research and looking at, you know, what's the story here, and has anyone else written about this guy? Because once I saw a story, I thought, my God, this is a movie. And it amazed me that although there had been a few books, they were dated, and they weren't kind of this, what you're talking about, which was a kind of, you know, pull the reader right in narrative history that gets you on the ground and allows you to experience what happened, as opposed to the sort of a textbook sort of dry telling of his story.
Well, there is nothing dry about this story. It is, and I really, when I say brilliant, I mean it is brilliant. It takes you up a, you know, of course, you were here to talk about NetForce, and the most recent book was Attack Protocol. And I'm sure that at some point, they're going to pick up NetForce as a streaming video thing. And I was going to tell you, as a matter of fact, last time when I talked, I said, make sure that when you announce a deal that you come on the program. They're going to pick that up. But I think better than even NetForce, and I love NetForce, I think this would make a streaming video. This guy is amazing. Will is a character. I mean, you almost, like, if you're thinking, you know, when you want to write a novel, you're trying to think of a character that will just stand out there and be memorable. Well, here he is, and he's real.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. That's the thing about this. I started looking, you know, as a novelist, you look for these dramatic hooks, and you look for, okay, you know, you set certain things up into play in a story that leads your character to do certain, you know, to act a certain way, or especially if you're writing any kind of adventure or heroic fiction, you're looking at, well, what's the turning point? Where's the real, you know, what is it that pushes this character forward to do something brave and heroic? And with Will, all of those hooks were there. Just to give you an example, and as you know from reading the book, his mentor, first of all, just to sort of set Will up for people who obviously aren't familiar with it, Will was a guy that was not expected, that nobody saw great heroism in, certainly in the military. He flunked out of Annapolis, the Naval Academy. He was reinstated, sort of, into the Navy, and he gets booted out of there because it was always insubordination. He was, somewhat slovenly his early on. His professors at the Naval Academy disliked him, and with good reason. He disappeared for lengths of time without explanation, or when he gave an explanation, it was something, you know, that was totally ridiculous. And on and on and on. And it's not easy to get kicked out of the Naval Academy for misbehavior, because that's what it's almost expected of Naval Academy students to this day, are almost expected to, you know, to misbehave, to put it politely. So you really have to kind of take misbehavior to the next level, to put it in modern terms. And that's what Will did. And yet, I spoke of this, you know, this gallant, heroic nature that seemed innate in him. And then to come back to what we just started out talking about, Will's mentor was the only teacher, a professor at the Naval Academy that he had any respect for, and it was an officer named Charles Flusser, who the reason Will respected him was because he was an old sea dog. He'd seen combat. He was the kind of person that Will could like, as opposed to somebody that he saw as being, you know, intellectual and part of an academic system. So he took a liking to Flusser, and Flusser took a liking to him because Flusser likewise saw in him somebody who had the makings of a great officer. So to cut ahead, when Will goes on this incredible mission to blow up an ironclad in a commando style mission, one of the things that spurs him on is that his mentor Flusser is killed in combat with this same ship that he later destroys. That's what spurs him on, along with somewhat lesser level, the death of Will's brother, Alonzo. So these were things that altered the course of Will's life. And, you know, again, as you said, if you're creating a character and looking for drama, what do you try to come up with? But, well, his best friend dies.
And how old is he? This is also so wonderful. I mean, he's so young.
He's not the whole book from beginning, other than obviously I write about his childhood and give you some background, but all of these military missions and the one that that the book climaxes with take place over a 3-year period when he's between 18 and barely 20 years old.
Oh boy, some Hollywood actor, some young guy out there, when he gets his part, he is going to make a career for himself. He is going to become
We need Keanu Reeves, but aged, whatever they can do with the computer, de-aged.
No, we need somebody so wonderful who will come on and do this character, because it is, I mean, you're writing it as, for me, you know, I wrote screenplays before. That's what I did a long time ago. So for me, when a book reads like a movie, or I actually forget that it's not a movie. I see it in my head, and I'm going with Will from page one. It is so good. It is such a part, and I know you went with a smaller publisher for this book, Regrini, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but, well, I hope.
To their great credit, they were the ones who really saw something in it.
Yeah, well, they're smart. I don't know if they were smart enough to make sure that they signed you up, that they're going to get a big portion of, because I think this will be terrific. I don't know who your people are, because you're of course NetForce, which is a major publication, book and a major series, because of course it's based on Tom Clancy's inspiration and stuff. And I know that the people in Hollywood over there will take notice of it. But I'm telling them, I hope that they grab this one actually first, because this will be so much fun to make. People don't understand what ironclad means. So just quickly explain why this was so unbelievable.
Yeah, that's important. The naval combat is not something people readily associate with the Civil War, and as you say, the ironclad is something that came to prominence and changed during the Civil War, and really changed the future, created the future of the modern Navy. That's a little awkward phrasing, but what I'm getting at is that before that, naval combat was conducted between wooden ships. That's what the technology allowed, and that's what existed for hundreds upon hundreds of years. And sometime in the middle of the 18th century, as it became easier and faster to forge iron, people started thinking about, what would an iron ship look like? What could it do? And obviously you start thinking, well, iron versus wood, which one's coming out on top? That was pretty obvious. So there were, really it was France that began to really build the first ironclads. And then when the Civil War broke out in the United States, the two secretaries of the Navy, the Confederate secretary, whose name was Mallory, and the Union Secretary of the Navy, Gideon Welles, both started what amounted to a kind of technology race or arms race.
It was an arms race. In a streaming video, this arms race would be so exciting. But then on top of it, Will was not satisfied with just being a captain on a ship. I mean, he got off the ship, and he actually, he was, a first Navy SEAL. For goodness sakes, this is so exciting. He wanted to get right into the heart of the action, and he did. And some of his exploits, as you said, people, I've always loved the Civil War era. I read a lot of Civil War books, but nobody has ever written a book like this that brings this naval action so to life. So it's so vivid. You write so beautifully. And I just can't go on. I spend an hour just telling you that you're an absolute genius. But to read about Will's exploits and how he plans these things off the ship, because we're used to captains are on their ship and they're going to be up there and they're above everybody else, but he gets right down to the nitty-gritty.
In the Civil War, the major strategy in terms of naval warfare for the Union was, well, we'll have these big ships and we're going to, the Confederates were in the southern areas were moving supplies, troops, everything along waterways that they were very familiar with. And there were a lot of these little winding waterways. So the Union's blockade efforts were to kind of stop these small boats from moving through these serpentine passages and inlets and getting supplies around, but it didn't work that well because, you know, when you've got these furtive boats that can move at night, and people who are familiar with the waters, having a big warship planted in one place is not going to be that effective. And it was Will who started thinking, you know, he could have done that, as you said. He could have stayed on a blockade boat and just sort of done what I was just describing, but he knew it was ineffective.
Oh, so no, he got on land. I mean, yeah. He was a real commando. He went in there and he got right, you know, with his people, and he brought them in. And I love the way that they shouted. I mean, yeah. Just everything about this.
He adopted the rebel yell, which of course, you know, we all hear about. And he thought, well, if it works for them, it can work for me. So he would just have this little group of 13 or 14 men land, come ashore into a town that, for all he knew, it's not like he had satellite data, for all he knew, and in many cases turned out to be true, was, you know, completely was full of Confederate troops. And they come ashore, and they're screaming and howling their heads off, and they're scaring the living daylight out of all these rebel soldiers.
It is so exciting. These commando raids, really. I mean, he captures towns, he captures important people, he takes them. I mean, it's so wonderful. I hope, and I'm sure you're smart enough that you've kept most of the rights, because you have to really. This has to be the deal of your lifetime, because I think this series, because it's new, it's fresh. There's so many things we don't know about this era. I love the sort of competing, the North and the South, this technology race, and you make it so clear that the Southerners, the way you write about them is great too, and the whole thing, and how, you know, Will captures takes slaves and releases them, all sorts of wonderful things. There are so many people, you know, all the people living along those states there on the East Coast, they are driving past these things every day, and they mm-hmm. hear these names, and they you know, it doesn't make any impact on them. They don't know mm-hmm. anything. But when they read this book, and when they see the streaming video that they're going to make of this, it will just open their eyes. And I think it's just, I think it'd be so good for people to know this. Besides the fact, it's so exciting. And if anybody knows anybody in the military, this book, any military guy will go crazy. But me, I mean, I just love history. I went crazy. Just and of course, because he's exciting, he's sexy, he's so fascinating. You know, Will Cushing is a hero that we all want to know more about.
You know, Patsy, one thing I'd like to add to build on what you were saying just a second ago. When I knew we were going to be talking today, I just started thinking about the book and different stuff. And it just, you know, by sad coincidence, we lost Chuck Yeager a couple of days ago. And so I had been reading some of the articles about him. And of course, a lot of us remember the right stuff, the book, the Tom Wolfe book and the movie. And Yeager was, you know, you look at him as a hero, and he's this, you know, hard-drinking, cigar-chomping maverick. He had a broken rib when he cracked the sound barrier the first time, 700 miles, going 700 miles an hour. He does it years later again, on and on and on. I mean, the guy is a larger-than-life figure, and the kind of what we like to think of as this real American hero. But again, Yeager was a non-conformist. And I think sometimes that's, I'm not saying that the two were exactly alike, but in some ways they were kind of, to me, again, throwback characters. There's something very knightly about them. There's something that goes beyond whatever era they live in.
Absolutely. And I just want to tell people that This is a fantastic book, and it's called Civil War Commando, William Cushing, and the Daring Raid to Sink the Ironclad, CSS Albemarle. You know, all you had to do was write Commando. I mean, Commando. This is it. This is a book for everybody. This is so good. It's so good. And I'm just trying to think, some actor out there in Hollywood, you are a lucky, lucky man, because you're going to become forever associated with Will Cushing and Jerome Preisler. You are amazing. And I don't know all the nomination procedure for Pulitzer Prizes, but I did put it on their website already this morning. I said, I want Jerome to win, because this book is fantastic.
Thank you so much. I humbly appreciate it.
Okay, and you have to promise that when you start making a deal and you can announce a deal, that you'll come back here and talk to us about it. And then, you know, maybe I could have you back sometime toward the end of January, and you could talk more. I would like, a lot of my listeners would like to know about the process of doing this kind of research. How about that? I will use any excuse to get you back on the program. I talk to you every week, so, you know. Okay?
You got a deal.
Okay. Thank you so much.
And all.
Okay. Thanks, Jerome. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Thanks, Patsy. Bye-bye.
Okay. We're going to do a quick commercial, and we'll be right back with somebody nice. Very nice, finally.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I have on the program today, Melissa De La Cruz. She was supposed to be here Tuesday. She's not here again. Don't do this to me, somebody. She's not here? Is this woman going to drive me crazy? This is
your
so
note
funny.
Says she's calling in at 11:40, though.
No, I told her to call in at 11:30, so I would know that she would be here. No, so we will wait. We will wait. You know, sometimes this happens. And as I mentioned on Tuesday, sometimes I used to freak out when people didn't call in. But you never know. You never know what's going on with people. It could be. Maybe there's a snowstorm somewhere. I don't know. My son says up north there, they've got rain, which he doesn't like. He doesn't mind the snow, but he doesn't. You know, where was I reading the other day? And they were describing somebody who had never seen snow before. They described it as little pieces of wool falling from the heavens. Isn't that nice? Little pieces of wool falling from the heavens. Of course, I was born in a blizzard, so I know what snow is. So perhaps, I don't know where she is. Maybe she's in a blizzard. We could hope. This is going to turn out, it's going to turn out to be one of those very famous guests of mine. You know, usually they become famous because they come on the program. She's going to become famous for not calling in on time. We've had a few, right, Ed? We've had a few sleeping in California, right? Yeah, that you've had to wake up. Yeah, Ed's had to wake up a few. They forget the time zone. I think I had also somebody from Alaska one time, and they also didn't call in. I think she's actually going to call in. I see the lights flashing. So we're going to hope that she's going to be on today. Okay, are we ready for action? Because I really, really like this book. And it's a very amusing story. So I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Melissa De La Cruz. Hi, Melissa.
Hello.
Okay.
Hi.
Great. Well, we are, I'm holding the book up here to the camera. It's a lovely book, and it's called Never After, The 13th Fairy. And as I mentioned, I had expected you to be on Tuesday. And so when you weren't on Tuesday, do you know that I read your book? I didn't have anything else to do since I didn't have you to talk to. So I thought, what the heck? Read this book because it is so very, very good. And you write so beautifully. I just love it. When you write, creatures old and new of every height and hue, from towering dragons, their armored scales glittering gold and green, to warty goblins, rambunctious dwarves. Oh, you know, I love your writing. I love your writing. And so on Tuesday, I read most of that prologue. I thought, what the heck? Why not? When you have really great writing like this.
That's so nice. And I'm sorry I missed Tuesday. It wasn't on my calendar, and my was turned off. So
okay.
Sorry.
Well, who knows? This is during these pandemic-y days. Nobody knows what they're doing anymore. You know, but it doesn't matter because I have a feeling that my listeners enjoyed reading about there were merchants and farmhands, milkmaids and page boys. There were grand dukes and great ladies and too many onlookers to count, for a collective breath had been held in the kingdom for countless nights. Countless souls wishing upon countless stars for the overall health of every perfect petite finger and toe. It was time to exhale. A new princess, the precious future of the kingdom. Oh, my goodness. I love that.
Oh, thank you. I had a lot of fun writing it.
Well, you have a way with words, to put it mildly. It is really, really good. I mean, fantastic writing. So why don't you tell us about it? Because it is, that's the prologue. But the main story, of course, is set it up for us, because this is a young adult fiction, and the main character is a young adult, a lovely, lovely character that you've developed called Philomena Jefferson Cho, and I really like her.
Aw, yay. It's the story about 12-year-old Philomena, and she's a big, big fan of the fictional book series called Never After. And so she's going to the bookstore because the 13th and final book is about to be published, and she cannot wait to read it. You know, she's going with all the other book fans, some of them in costume as characters in the book. And when she gets to the bookstore, she's told that there is no 13th book. It's not being published. And the author has disappeared, so they don't know if it's ever going to be published. So there's this very, very sad and devastating Philomena. You know, she was just looking forward to this book so much. And as she walks home, she actually bumps into a couple of people who turn out to be real characters from the book. They're not just fans in costume. And they tell her that Never After is real, and she should come with him right away. And so they go,
well,
and she has a great adventure with them.
Well, yeah. We will say that this is a book of adventures. And as I said, you are such a great writer. I love the way that you use words. And the wonderful thing is, I was so really thankful for you that there was a writer like you, because, you know, I just want so much to encourage people to read. And for me to think of the young people who might read this book and have in their head some really fine writing. This is not watered down writing. This isn't writing done, you know, just to, you know, attract some kids to read it. This is fine writing. This is thoughtful writing. And your way with words, everything you do is just wonderful. I was thrilled at your use of words. You're not writing down. You're not simplifying things. You're treating young readers as young adults who really are ready to grasp, words and to enjoy the process of reading everything, whether you use a word like rando or what's the one, sigil, things that might just get them thinking, whoa, this is a nice way to use words.
Yeah, I hope it inspires them, certainly, definitely. I would never talk down to kids. I think kids are a lot smarter than we give them credit for, and they can grasp a lot of things very easily, definitely.
Well, so often people think, you know, it's always funny. I will talk to a writer's group, and so sometimes a writer's group will say, well, you know, I want to write, somebody in the group will say, you know, I'm going to start writing, but I think I'll start with a kid's book first. And I say, God, no.
Yeah.
No. And then like they're going to work up to middle grade, then they're going to work up to young adult, and then they're going to work up to, you know. And I say, no, the kid's book is the most difficult. That picture book, believe me, every word there counts. So you have to really become really fine-tuned to words and to how to use them. And having a middle grade or a young adult book, it is not simple writing if it's going to be great. And it, as we found out with the Harry Potter books, right? You have to be a good writer, and you certainly are.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Well, tell us.
No, people always think that picture books are easy to write. They actually are very, very difficult.
They are. Well, tell us just about your character, how you created the character of Philomena. Because I love the way you describe her, and I just love the way that you write about her. So tell us a little bit about her background and how you came out with that idea.
Sure. Well, Philomena is a little bit, always kind of inspired by me. I think C.S. Lewis said that, you know, you either write for the child that you used to be or one specific child. You know, this idea that you're writing for this amorphous blob of children, you know, that's not really the way to become a writer for children. So I always write for the kid I used to be, and I think Philomena was a lot like me at that age. I definitely escaped the books. I definitely would rather read than do anything else. And so she has a lot of, I guess, my sense of humor and my habits. And she's a little bit like my kid. So my daughter was about 12 years old when I was writing this book, and Filomeno's 12. So there's some of her sass is from my own kid, and you know, a little bit of her experiences might have been things that my daughter or my nephews, who are also about the same age, might have been going through at that time.
Well, it's all fiction. Yeah, well, that's it. We steal from all those people around us.
and in
the olden days when we used to sit in coffee shops and we'd steal dialogue from the people behind us sometimes, but nowadays we don't get to sit around so much with people anymore. We're sort of always in the house. But I love every little thing about this book, even the British Kit Kat.
They are so much better than American Kit Kat.
Oh, they are.
Absolutely.
You know, I lived in England for quite a few years, And there are things like that where the British Kit Kat is much better than the American because they can't get away with it. It's sort of like it's sort of like books. It's funny. Books that will be published in America and books that will be published in England. The books that will be published in England, they will have classier covers, nicer author photos, and then they will, you know, flop off some stuff on American sometimes. And I get really annoyed at that. But it does happen. But of course, being in a country where, you know, Cadbury and where just chocolate was very important when I lived in England. We loved chocolate. And you go to the sweet shop there was only one store in my little village, and it was a sweet shop. So, yeah, we noticed those kind of things.
Yep. Definitely.
So you know, you have written I don't know, zillions of books. How many billions? I don't know. Like, you write nonstop, and it is wonderful the way that you've, of course, in this book, she's you know, Philomena's mixed race, so, which is great because, you know, it's life and it's the world and it opens up so many things, and I just love it. And wow, it's good that on this end of the thing, things are changing, that people of different races and different colors and different all have this opportunity now to, you know, be characters in books.
Absolutely. Definitely. I think there's a lot of interest and hunger for that, for seeing yourself in a book. I'm part Chinese and part Filipino. My brother married, his wife was Korean. One of my best friends is a British mom. And so I kind of just put everybody together.
Amalgamation of all, everybody.
It would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Everybody in my life is in my book.
Well, that's what makes it so much fun. And as I was reading, as I said, the prologue, and I read much more of it on Tuesday to people, tell us a little bit about the story of this princess and why we have this invitation. The prologue is...
Never After is a retelling of fairy tales, and the first book in the series is a retelling of Sleeping Beauty. It opens with, you know, the famous scene in Sleeping Beauty where the evil fairy comes and curses the princess. So I've always been interested in Sleeping Beauty, and when I was doing some research, I discovered that the original story of Sleeping Beauty by the Brothers Grimm actually doesn't end with the prince kissing Sleeping Beauty awake and them living happily ever after. There's actually a part two to it where the prince's mother is an ogre, and there's tragedy and bloodshed, and and the Sleeping Beauty is murdered, and the prince is framed for her murder. It's just horrible and bloody, and I thought, oh my goodness, I have to write about that. That sounds really fun.
Yeah. The Brothers Grimm could be rather grim, to put it mildly.
I guess so.
Definitely. And so this was so clever. This opening was so clever. And as I said, you know, it's your writing's almost like reading poetry aloud. It reads so beautifully.
Yeah, it was meant to have kind of a rhyming kind of cadence.
Yeah, it does.
To have the fairy tale kind of feel to the prologue. And the prologue is interspersed throughout the book, so it goes on for a little bit. In between, you know, the modern story.
Well, I love that. I love the way that you've put these words together. Isn't it just so beautiful how simple words, if they're put in the right order and with the right cadence, just are so, so beautiful.
Yeah. I think that's why, books like Dr. Seuss, you know, classic, really easy to read, really fun for the kids, to hear that rhyme. So, yeah, it was fun to put it in the book, definitely. It was like being a kid again.
Well, you know, I'm sure that this book will be a great success. And I was telling my listeners on Tuesday, I said, you know, for a lot of people in this pandemic-y times, when people are sort of, everybody's nervous and everybody's like, well, just sort of going crazy. Although this is written for younger people, if you're young at heart, I think particularly any woman would really enjoy this book for several reasons. One, I think there's something about the way that you write that any woman who enjoys reading, this book will calm you down. I found that I was calmer. I was so into the story. I so enjoyed the character. I so cared about Philomena that there's a slowing down process. And I felt a very hopeful process. It's funny. I just felt that there was some deeper meaning in this book. I don't know if you meant it, but it's to that life can be fantastic, and sometimes you don't know what it's going to lead to. And so I really think this is a great book for a lot of people, not just for young adults. I think a lot of people will enjoy this. And it's called Never After, the 13th Fairy.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Yeah, I hope so. I hope more than just kids pick up the book. Definitely.
Exactly. Definitely. More. It really should be more than kids picking up this book. It's a great, and for all you writers out there, if you want to learn how to use words, get this book. This is like right here. This book is a lesson. It's you can learn like a university course here. How to write beautifully by reading Melissa de la Cruz's book. And of course, you are also the New York Times bestselling author of Descendants series. And where do you have a web page you want people to go to?
Sure. It's neverafterseries.com and also melissa-delacruz.com.
Well, thank you so much for being on the program today. I'm glad we finally got you. And you have something new. You have something new coming up soon.
Well, this book is out right now, so that's the
main one. We'll push. Okay, so Never After. Yeah. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. First of all, for any young people, you know, boys or girls will enjoy this. But all you women out there, if you're just so stressed out, you need a day or two just to relax, get this book, Never After. And I think it'll touch your heart. And that's what we need right now, don't you think?
I think so. It's a fun, cozy read. It'll make you feel warm and happy.
It will make you feel warm and happy. And that's what we need. And particularly warm, because we're freezing here in Florida right now. Okay. Thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today. It has been a joy to talk to you. And I think you'll do very well with this book, too. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Thanks so much. It's a pleasure.
Okay. Bye, Melissa.
Glad we got to connect.
Okay. Bye, Melissa. All right, people, what a book. I'm telling you, I read it, you know, I read it once, and then I had to go back, and I went sort of through the pages, picking out how she used words. And it is so beautiful. The words flow, and the words are so, you think you've heard these words a million times, but when she writes them, she puts them in the right order, for goodness sakes. I mean, it's something about you're analyzing it. You have to almost stop as a writer. Any of you writers out there, I would study this book. Because if you could write like this, yeah, I think you'd be a very, 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 very happy person. Because not too many people are able to do that. This book did not do this with a grammar program. Please stop using those grammar programs. I'm going crazy. If I hear if I read one more book full of musts, I'm going to go nuts because grammar programs change everything, every have to, into a must. And I cannot stand it. I'm going crazy. I'm now going to start scanning books just to see if they are filled with the word must. Must, 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 must. If you have to go to the bathroom, say, I have to go to the bathroom. If your character says, I have to kill you because you're getting on my nerves, lady. Yeah, you know, maybe you want to change it to must. But otherwise, please, please stop with the grammar programs. They're driving me nuts. They're driving me literally nuts because I have to stop and say, did that person really understand that they are changing every other word because some grammar program says, well, you could say this word instead of that word, and they're doing it and nothing sounds right. Melissa did not do that. Never After the 13th Fairy is a beautifully written book, a wonderful story. And as she said, it's a warm and cozy book for all ages. But for all of you guys out there, get Jerome Preisler's Commando. That book is so good. It's so intense. I felt like I was going, by the end, I felt like I had gone through the Civil War, and I lived every minute of it. It's filled, just filled with wonderful stories. And definitely, if you like Star Wars, you'll want to know about Will Cushing, because this is a character of the ages. You can, you know, when you say you cannot make this up, you cannot make up Will. What a man, what a hero, what an amazing person. And what he did and his adventures as a commando, as a ship captain, it takes your breath away. I really cannot recommend. I think it's my number one book for the year. Jerome is amazing, and I hope that somehow I have to figure out how to nominate him officially. I don't know how they do it for Pulitzer Prize, because it is a brilliant, brilliant book. Okay, what else? Oh, people, make sure that you go to my webpage. I've been getting some nice, very nice suggestions, and I've got a lot of great authors coming up in January and February, and some of them are because you recommended them. So go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and there's a form on the bottom, at the very bottom of the page, and you can put in whoever you want to be on the program. Because remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So start writing today. My goodness, what are you waiting for? In a year, you could be a guest here on Joy on Paper. But it won't happen unless you start writing. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed. Thank you, Ed, for everything. We finally got this woman on. Okay, great. Great job. We're really kidding. We are going crazy. Anyway, thank you. Ed saluted me, and I saluted him, and I should have been in general. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and stay warm and stay safe. Bye-bye now.